National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This Easter, the Church welcomed thousands of new Catholics across the country, and among those numerous new Catholics are members of Generation Z, part of what many think might be a significant revival of faith among young people. Register staff writer Jonah McKeown explores the important question, is this revival real? And then, the National Catholic Register is launching a redesign, and we're very excited to tell you about the exciting changes and additions to our already award-winning coverage. Register graphic artist Melissa Hartog joins us. Hello, I'm Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News and host of Register Radio, joined as always by my co-host Shannon Mullen, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register.
Hello, Matthew.
Well, as Jonah McKeown has recently written for the National Catholic Register, has Gen Z found religion? It's an intriguing question because, as he writes, if the headlines are to be believed, more people are becoming Catholic these days than ever before, including many members of Generation Z, those born approximately between 1997 and 2012. The question is that real and can it actually be quantified? And in a very rare treat, we are joined by Jonah here in studio.
Thanks, Matthew. It's great to be here in Washington.
Well, it's great to have you here at any time, but especially on this topic, because you not only are something of our Gen Z expert, you are also our AI expert. And I know we're going to want to talk to you about that again in the near future. But where are we in terms of Gen Z?
Yeah, so it's a really interesting picture to try and paint because the main answer is statistically we don't really know whether Gen Z is coming back to religion. The headlines, as you mentioned, many of which can be found here in the Register, are actually extremely positive. There's many kind of anecdotal signs that Gen Z in general, especially on college campuses, is really expressing a lot of interest in religion and specifically in the Catholic Church. You know, I've personally interviewed, you know, many current college students and campus ministers at Newman Centers around the country at some very major secular universities, and they really are seeing record numbers of converts, you know, a lot of kind of less quantifiable, just kind of interest in their offerings, in their sacramental offerings and, you know, events on campus for the Catholic centers and Newman centers. So, again, anecdotally, it does seem like the tide is kind of turning in favor of Catholicism in many ways for many members of Gen Z, not just in college, but in general. But then if you try to actually quantify that with data, the short answer is the data has not caught up yet. We honestly don't know if there's a tide turning in terms of something that's actually able to be measured statistically. The available data that we have really only goes up to about 2024, and it does show that the decline of Christianity in the U.S. is slowing down. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's on the upswing. So, the short answer is we don't know exactly what is happening at the moment.
So hypothetically, we're talking about a subset of people entering the church, and this is the Gen Zs would be a subset of a subset.
Yes, that's exactly right. And listeners might know that the official Catholic directory is kind of the official official. It's even in its name, the kind of the repository of statistics on how many people are Catholic. And the, you know, for example, if we're talking about the number of people who became Catholic last year, those numbers aren't really going to show up until later this fall at this earliest. And even then, the official Catholic directory doesn't record converts' ages. So if we're talking about adult converts, that data doesn't really give us a sense of how many of them are Gen Z. So it's difficult exactly to know with any certainty at this point how many members of Gen Z are becoming Catholic. But it does seem like there's quite a few.
Yeah, and some of that anecdotal evidence that you're talking about, just top of mind in the past couple of years, we've had features on the Catholic centers at Newman Centers, at Texas A&M, at Ohio State at and the RCI or OCI program at Notre Dame having so many converts that they are advertising for catechists. And so Matt McDonald's recent piece about the young adult group in South Boston, mm-hmm. you know, a Wednesday night, a couple hundred people showing up. So there is, as you said, a lot of hopeful, positive signs. But let's talk about the data that is available, and a lot of it comes from Pew, right? So, and that's more broadly looking at religious trends here in the United States. So what do we learn from Pew?
Yeah, so from the interesting thing about the Pew Research Center data is that it actually does not paint a very hopeful picture about Gen Z. One thing that you can kind of glean from that data is that there's a phenomenon called the stickiness of non-religion, which basically means that if a certain generation is not terribly religious, then their children are likely to be even less religious, and so on and so forth. And we've seen there's a downward decline in the number of people who identify as Christian and also those who actually practice. And so, as I mentioned, there has been, at least since COVID, a very slight kind of uptick in the number of people overall identifying as Christian, but actual religious practice, like going to church, has not risen, unfortunately. But again, that may have changed in the past 2 years or so. We just don't know yet. But I think it's also worth mentioning that Gen Z, it is quite clear from the data that Gen Z is actually the least church attending generation in American history. Only about 17% overall of Gen Z attend weekly. And perhaps the most striking fact is that 38% of Gen Z individuals have never attended church. And that actually presents quite an opportunity for for our church as Catholics, all of us, to kind of step in and fill that gap. And that's not an abstract thing. Several of the interviews I've spoken to who are young converts themselves didn't grow up going to church at all. And when they get to campus, they realize, hey, I want to figure out my own path here. I want a religion of some kind. I don't know what it is. And then in many cases, the Catholic community has really stepped up and invited them, like, hey, come check us out. And it's had great results.
Well, historically, too, we've seen that young people really have to own, at a certain point, they have to make the decision to carry on in the faith of their family.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
which is one of the parts of research for inactive Catholics. 20, 25 years ago, we had as much as a quarter of the population, basically, has left some church. Mm. And that obviously has increased significantly since then. So one question, too, is, and I don't know if we can even answer this, how many of those who are not church attending but who grew up in some faith, or at least nominally, how many of them are actually baptized?
That's a really good question. I don't know the exact answer to that, but I know, again, certainly. I spoke to one young woman who, you know, described her upbringing as, you know, she's brought up Christian and, you know, always believed in God and believed in his fatherly love and all that good stuff. But she had never been baptized before. And so when she entered the church, she was baptized and confirmed.
Again, it's anecdotal, but what have you gleaned? Because you've written a lot of these pieces. What is driving even the anecdotal increases we see among young people? What are some themes that pop up? And one of the things I was going to ask you about is there a Charlie Kirk effect? You know, that's part of this, or again, there just isn't enough data to really tell us that?
Well, in answer to your first question, the absolute number one thing is personal invitations. Every single convert that I've spoken to has said, you know, it wasn't that necessarily that they just saw a flyer or saw something on social media. It was that someone befriended them and specifically invited them to come to Mass or to come to an event. And so you really just can't underestimate the power of a personal connection, because I know it's so easy in you know, today's day and age to kind of just hide behind your screen and not you know, not put yourself out there and care about others enough to invite them into our Catholic faith. And that's a challenge for me too, of course. It's a challenge for all of us. But yeah, that just the personal, you know, in an age of social media and all that stuff, that just the personal connections is the number one thing. Yeah, in terms of a Charlie Kirk effect, I have heard that from some campus ministers. In fact, you know, for example, the priest at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln told me that, you know, not just their Catholic community, but all church communities around their campus have seen, you know, just kind of more interest, people, young people just searching for something that's true in this crazy world. So it's an interesting time for sure.
So is this also a demonstration that we can have all of the programs and invest large amounts of money in programs for evangelization, but it still really does come down to living the faith and being a witness to the faith?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. It's yeah, people witnessing to the faith and inviting people to encounter Jesus in, you know, in the Eucharist, in the Mass. I mean, like, there's nothing wrong with programs at all, but yeah, it sometimes it's just as simple as that, as an invitation to encounter Jesus.
And one last quick question, since we only have about a minute left. Those campuses, those parishes that have seen these huge increases, how prepared are they for these increases? In other words, how prepared are they to welcome such a large number of candidates?
That's a good question. I mean, many of the Newman Centers on campus, a lot of the ones I've talked to have, you know, recently done big renovations and have beautiful big churches and things like that. But I would imagine many parishes probably are not prepared for a lot of young people to come back. And so, yeah, that's definitely a challenge. You know, obviously this kind of increase in interest is not spread out evenly everywhere, and that kind of goes without saying. And so it's definitely I guess it's a good problem to have if you have a lot of people coming
yeah,
to Mass.
As some of the French bishops were asking, as they're seeing increases in candidates, you know, what are we inviting them back to?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, Jonah, great work as always, so thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're listening to Register Radio here on EWTN Radio. Next up, we talk with Register graphic artist Melissa Hartog about the redesign of the National Catholic Register. Don't go anywhere.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. I'm Matthew Bunsen, your host, here with Shannon Mullen, the co-host and editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register. Well, in the long and genuinely venerable history of the National Catholic Register, our readers have appreciated both the content and also the look of the paper. That is why we take very seriously any changes. They are done thoughtfully and prudently. That is also why we are so happy to announce that a new design has come to the Register. And to talk about all of that, we're joined by Melissa Hartog, Register graphic artist who played a massive role in crafting our new look, and she joins us now. Welcome, Melissa.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
I'm dumbfounded to say that this is the first time you've been on Register Radio. So first, thank you for making the time and welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So, Shannon, let's start with you if we can, because as editor-in-chief, considering any sort of a change to a paper, any look, there are a lot of things that have to go into that rather thought-provoking exercise.
Yes, Melissa and I were talking beforehand and we were laughing. This is a completely visual subject.
Yes.
So maybe radio isn't the perfect medium for this, but
so our audience can expect many adjectives.
As you said, the Register is already known for its wonderful design. Thanks to Melissa, you know, she's really the driver of that and has been for many years. And it has a traditional, beautiful look to it. But the truth is, it hasn't undergone any kind of significant redesign in 18 years. So right off the bat, I wanted to make the point that our content isn't changing. The size of the newspaper is not changing. But the way we organize that content, we really felt could use some freshening up.
So the rationale for doing it, because we often encounter news organizations and products and companies that do these rebrands and realize in short order that probably wasn't a great idea. But we know that this is a good idea.
Yeah, this is, as we'll get into it with Melissa, this was really reader-focused. So I'm an old newspaper guy. And I've been through multiple redesigns and retrenchment and things like that. And it's usually less, not more. And we're kind of flipping the script on that. We're giving readers more. But as Melissa will explain, we're also just helping them navigate and consume our content more easily. And to make that great content shine that much brighter.
Right. So, Melissa, here we are talking about a redesign. You are part of a, as I use that word, I'll use it again, venerable history. So when the idea was raised and it fell to you to begin thinking about this, what were your immediate thoughts in terms of needs and wants for a new look?
Flexibility. I think that flexibility was one of my key things that I would like to have seen in it, which I think we did really well. We've had content for so many years, and it's changed over the years, just like, you know, any organization does. And we felt the need that we had to, you know, be able to organize that better, and certain things would fit into, one bubble of content, and others would fit into others. And so we wanted to be able to organize that better. And I think we've achieved that, with the different new sections we have. And we aren't, like Shannon said, we aren't taking away anything. In fact, we're adding things, which was really exciting as well. And, you know, it allows me to design more too. And that's obviously my goal, is to be able to make it look prettier.
How has technology helped in this? Because obviously 18 years ago, technology looked a little different.
Yes, I think that's the key here, is technology has changed. Websites are big, social media is big, and the way they organize content is, you know, that's one of the main things of those, the objectives of those sites is to organize the content so that readers can see it. So in the same way, we need to do that in print. You'll notice in the design now, we've changed the way our labeling has gone, bringing a little bit more color to them, making it stand out a little bit more so that you can navigate as the reader. And I think that's one key thing to any design, is just being able to flow on the page a lot easier.
Let me just jump in and let's get some specifics here. The first thing I want to say is that next year, 2027, will be the Register's 100th anniversary. So, you know, one of the motivations that we had was to kind of get a jump on that and start the celebration early. So that's important to keep in mind. But let me just give some specifics, and we'll go back to you, Melissa. What's new? A new section called Page 2. This is a colorful new page which highlights trending faith-related stories, those viral kind of stories that you might have missed. Public Square, this is a new section that pulls together politics and policy coverage. This would include pro-life, religious liberty news, and analysis, as well as the opinion page. Let's talk about that opinion page. One of the new additions to that is the work of editorial cartoonist Steve Breen. Steve is a two-time Pulitzer Prize winner. He's a devout Catholic dad of seven. And he and I have worked together in the past at my former newspaper. A new section called Devotion. This is focused on saints, prayer, feast days, and the latest programming from EWTN. And a brand new section called Vitae, which is our kind of new expanded lifestyle section. This is where you're going to see great profiles, features on art, books, film, travel, food and wine, Catholic weddings, and the new Catholic crossword puzzle, and a new section which will occasionally pop up, which is the deep dive. This is when we have a long form piece that we really want to showcase, but we don't want to make readers jump around from page to page to read it. It's all on one page. It's beautifully designed. But Melissa, we're bearing the lead. The text is larger by a half a point. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that?
That really does matter, yes. Though, doesn't it?
Yes. You know, we got a lot of feedback over the years about from our readers that wanted larger text. They felt that it was too small to read. So we decided to do some checking to see on how we could, you know, make it bigger and make it more legible. And I think we did. It's half a point size bigger. And it has a little bit more space between the lines, which I think allows the eye to not be, it doesn't seem so crowded to the eye. And I think most people will notice it in print. Not a severe notice, but they'll definitely notice that it's easier to read.
Yeah, it's not the large print edition of the Register, but, one of the things that motivated us, a funny thing happens with the Register. We have very loyal subscribers. Mm-hmm. Our paper, which is a big broadsheet, beautiful paper, continues to come out every 2 weeks. And this is sort of like a greatest hits compilation, because our content is on ncregister.com 24/7. This is the best of the 2 weeks, packaged together for our readers. They like sitting down with it and reading it from start to finish. And then what happens is they set it down. They set it down on their kitchen counter. They set it down on their coffee tables. And other people pick it up. Mm-hmm. And that's really what we're interested in, is that moment, the better, the more enticing we can make the newspaper look. Adult children, workmen who happen to be in the home, relatives who have been away from the faith, they're going to be drawn by the beauty of the product and pick it up.
Backs of churches.
And the backs mm-hmm. of churches, yes.
Many a narthex in the United States is now festooned with the National Catholic Register. Yeah. But one of the things I want to hop back to is these new sections. You can tell right off that we're not arbitrarily choosing these new sections. There's a value and a point to each of them. I was, when you said it, I immediately thought Public Square. Well, this is certainly a timely moment to have a section called Public Square, isn't it?
It sure is, yeah. There's not a stay in the lane section, right? Catholics were supposed to be engaged in politics and policy and all those and fighting for our rights.
Right. But then in terms of how this looks, I mean, very briefly, Melissa, what are a few of the things that really flash through your mind visually when you're given the opportunity to create a new section, say, Vitae?
Vitae being that it's the, the cultural section, mm-hmm. expanded, of course, but it is the cultural section. So, the difference between Public Square and Vitae is slight difference in look. I think Public Square has that traditional structured look to it, whereas Vitae can be a little bit more fun. So when it comes to design, those are the types of things that I have to remember that this is, you know, more of a cultural thing. So we're going to maybe not make it look like a magazine, but we can have a little bit more fun with the illustrations and just the layouts in general. So it's one of those sections that is becoming my one of my favorites to design, definitely.
Yeah, and Shannon, how about you? What's your favorite new section?
Yeah, this was a 100-step journey, and it was all, and I just loved how it evolved and the wonderful job that Melissa did. And so, yeah, Vitae does have that sort of magazine feel to it, and the first couple of issues really look fantastic.
Yeah, and speaking from a personal standpoint, I love the crossword puzzle. When we were talking about the redesign early on, I thought, well, this is going to be very exciting. And it's not going to be over the heads of readers, we promise. But, right. But it's still a lot of fun. Well, thank you to both of you. And I know the whole team worked so hard on this.
They did.
And the look is great. And I would encourage everyone not just to go to ncregister.com, but to subscribe to the National Catholic Register. It's very special, and it's a unique and venerable publication.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for Register Radio for this week. As I said, you can tune in to ncregister.com for a lot more news, analysis, and commentary. Thanks so much for joining us. On behalf of our producer, Michael McCall, and Shannon Mullen, I'm Matthew Bunsen. Please take care, and God bless.